Hi, Ariana.
Hi, Vanessa.
Thank you for meeting me at this dog park.
Yeah, I thought it would be great, two in one, get to walk your dog, see all of these cute dogs, give us a little boost, and talk about A Woman of Harry Potter.
Yep.
Who are you blessing today, Vanessa?
I am going to bless Professor Sprout, head of Hufflepuff House and herbology teacher.
I wish we had more of Professor Sprout in these books.
Yes.
She is just like this beacon of wonderfulness. What are you blessing her specifically for?
I am blessing her because she seems to be somebody who has a calling and has found it and is just like fully living into her calling. So obviously her name is Sprout and she works with plants professionally. So part of me just thinks that she changed her name to Sprout. What's your theory on that?
Maybe she came from a long line of herbologists and someone at Ellis Island changed their name to Sprout because that was their profession. This is in my alternate universe where they came to America and then went back to England.
Got it.
And all of that knowledge got passed down to her and she's the recipient of it.
Yes. Okay. So I love that theory too. But I think that the moment where we really see that she has her calling in a way that I find interesting and important is in book two, The Chamber of Secrets. So prior to the Chamber of Secrets being open and prior to anybody being petrified, they are working with mandrakes. She's teaching students how to work with mandrakes.
Right.
And then it turns out that mandrakes are necessary to heal people who have been petrified. And this is like a really heroic moment of Professor Sprout, right? Madame Pomfrey, who is such a good healer, cannot heal these people without the help of Professor Sprout. And I think that this is a moment where I feel like this is a moment where heroes are made, where like newspaper articles get written about cures being found. And I think that our generation, whatever sort of limit we put on that, there are studies that show that people are, you know, nowadays are really worried about finding a job that is their calling, right? That is simultaneously able to support them financially, but also will like spiritually nourish them or give their lives meaning.
Right.
And I think that what we don't see a lot of is all of the work that goes into being ready for the moment when you're actually called.
Mm.
And that Professor Sprout, we know, has been teaching at Hogwarts for, you know, years, if not decades, prior to this moment. And she has just been, like, putting her head down and doing work that she loves and believes in. And then this opportunity for her to be, like, truly heroic comes, and she is ready. And she is ready because of years of invisible labor. And I think that she would be just as heroic if that opportunity wasn't given to her to really shine. And so I think that she is a way for us to really think about this idea of calling in our own lives.
I have a lot of thoughts about this. I love your imagining this as one moment of calling. But like, I think in my imagination of Professor Sprout, there are so many moments where Madame Pomfrey needs something from her. We see a moment where Slughorn needs something from her, like maybe Snape needs something from her for a potion, that like she is always kind of behind the scenes. We never see it. But like without her, the structure of heroic moments at Hogwarts when crisis is happening would not be possible without Professor Sprout. And I think we happen to see it in this moment because Harry's here and it's so intense and like she is in the public spotlight more because of it. But I think she probably has a lot of heroic moments. But I completely agree with you that it is because of all of the labor that she's put in over the many years. Like the fact of the matter is, like, this isn't her first time dealing with mandrakes. She knows exactly what to do. She knows exactly what signs to look out for. And if this were her first time dealing with mandrakes, maybe things wouldn't have gone as well. It's the years of experience that make her capable to succeed in this moment.
But I think that what you just said is always true of heroes and always true of people who we see as quote unquote having a calling or is more often than not, right? I think we love stories of breakout success, right? Of somebody who just like happened to be in the right place in the right time and was pretty enough and whatever, that they just got plucked randomly, like Donna Reed, right? Got plucked randomly from sitting at a counter and became a movie star and became a producer. And, you know, those are great stories. But I think more often than not, the heroic teachers who we hear about who protect their students from gun violence are people who have been heroic daily in their lives of coming back to schools where they don't get paid enough and don't have enough resources and are still teaching their students. Or of nurses who care for patients every day and therefore can come up with a cure because they've been noticing for 30 years in caring for patients that it's actually X and not Y that can actually help patients get better, right? So I agree with you that Professor Sprout is always behind the scenes and always necessary. And I think Professor Sprout genuinely loves being with plants.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think she genuinely loves her students.
Yeah.
The glory happens to come, but I also don't think that that is where she gets her satisfaction from.
Yeah. I think if I can point to another moment.
Yes.
Right after Dumbledore dies, all of the teachers are talking about what the fate of Hogwarts will be. And McGonagall says, we need to close the school. And Sprout answers back, I feel that if a single pupil wants to come, then the school ought to remain open for that pupil. And I think—
Such a Hufflepuff response.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. There's something about legacy and practicing that, like, she is the head of Hufflepuff. And, like, she is also this kind of embodiment of the Hufflepuff idea of creating space for everyone. And I think, first of all, she's certainly practiced that over the years by leading the house and teaching those values to students. And then she embodies those values when it's most important in this moment of crisis. And I think that this is another instance of Sprout being quietly heroic, that there are moments that we see in book 7 where, like, she and McGonagall and Flitwick are fighting against Snape. There are so many moments where we see her take up arms in fighting for what's right. And she never does that in a big way in these books, but she is always on the right side.
And I think that that is also about a feeling of calling, right? She knows who she is and she knows what her values are. And so even if she were to make a mistake, it would be based on the right values.
Right.
And I just think that is the way that I want to think about calling, is like, what values do I want to sew into the fabric of my life and to put myself in a position where that is always going to be the choice that I make. And she, I'm guessing, made a choice when she was offered to be the head of Hufflepuff House of, like, yes, a value that I always want to think about is I'll take the lot, which is why I think one of the only cross house, like, deep educational experiences that we see in these books is Neville and Professor Sprout. She's like, it doesn't matter that you're not sorted into my house. I'll take the lot.
Right.
And she's always going to raise to the higher ideal than the, like, particularities.
And how about that for fostering a sense of calling in a young person who she sees potential in, who, like, by mentoring him, by giving him books, by being the person that he's excited to show his new plant to, that he gets a sense of his calling in the world and his value in the world because she's there and working with him. I think what I like about what you've just said, you know, calling in quotation marks, we've associated it with a career or a profession. And I think the crisis around calling in our generation is, like, this idea that, like, no person's going to have one career. We're all going to have 8 careers. And there's no such thing as just, like, being a lawyer for the rest of your life. And there's anxiety around that because you're like, oh, where am I going to go? Who am I going to be? There's just not one narrative to tell yourself. And I think there's some productivity around the destruction of those monolithic identities. But I also think that there's something valuable in having a calling. And what you're pointing to in Sprout, roundabout way of coming back to this, but is a calling being a value?
Mm-hmm.
That my calling is to always ask the question, who is at the margins? That my calling is always to be opening my doors, that, like, you can have a question or a mantra or, like, something that pulls you to make all of the decisions in your life, and that can be your calling, and that it exists outside of the professional setting. Like, we no longer have that sense of calling, but we have this truer sense of calling that should guide us.
Thank you for articulating my blessing better than I did, because that's exactly what I think she did, right? Like, I think she has made a series of commitments that have led her to a moment in which she's heroic. And I think that, you know, I think that we are in a series of crises as a country right now. And a question that I'm asking myself, right? Like, as I see the crisis at the border, as I see the climate crisis, is like, what can I do to help? And I'm like, well, I'm 37 years old. I've already made a lot of choices. I can't go to medical school or law school right now. Like, right? Like, I can't afford it. Any number of things. I have other responsibilities. But what I have is a microphone. And so, like, I can talk about these things. And I did not go into podcasting thinking, well, there are going to be issues and I'm going to want a microphone. And I feel a tremendous amount of anxiety about the fact that I don't have actual skills to offer, like that I can't be a climate scientist. But I think that by thinking about our values, we can find opportunities no matter what choices we've made to live our values. Everything is an opportunity to be radical. Everything is an opportunity to live your values. And I think that Professor Sprout shows us that being an herbology teacher is an opportunity to be a radical person on the right side of history.
And to be creative about it, like to take the mandrake and to make the mandrake potion that cures people who are petrified, and then to take the mandrake in book 7 and throw it over the wall.
Yeah.
And let the screaming be a kind of defense. I think that's incredible. Yeah, I think I've just come up with like a horrible punny thing to say, but I'm going to say it, which is that like Professor Sprout is not afraid to get dirt under her nails. And that's something that gets said about her in the book, that she's always has dirt on her fingernails and hands. But it is also true of how she's living her life. She's doing the work and she's getting dirty doing it.
And she just is so focused on the work that actually matters that she doesn't care about other things, which we see in, like, she puts on silly earmuffs. She's like, I don't care about fashion. Like, she is walking through the world laser focused on teaching and herbology, and the world gives her back these opportunities to be the best version of that, and she takes every opportunity to be the best version of that.
Absolutely. Well, Vanessa, I have a quiz for you.
I'm shocked.
And it is about mandrakes.
Are you so impressed, given that we're about to talk about mandrakes, which are so loud, how quiet all of these dogs have been? Such good dogs at this dog park.
I know. We gave them all peanut butter before we started recording.
Oh, so much peanut butter that it's kept them this quiet.
So mandrakes have magical use in our text, but also historically have been thought to have magical and medicinal qualities and have been used in different ways throughout history.
I did not know that mandrakes were real.
Oh, yeah. And they look like little humans.
Oh, okay.
Well, at least one species does.
Okay. I had no idea.
And all of the things in the book are based on real kind of folklore about mandrake. Like, people used to think that if you didn't pull them out in the right way that they would scream.
So cool. I had no idea.
So my first question, mandrake is actually mentioned in the Bible. What story is it associated with?
Did I earn my divinity school degree is on the line.
A, when Moses sent 12 spies to the land of Canaan, they brought back lots of plants, but among them is listed mandrake.
Uh-huh.
B, it is among Cain's offerings to God instead of lamb. C, Rachel and Leah negotiate about mandrake that's been harvested in exchange for sleeping in Jacob's bed. Or D, Jesus curses a mandrake to wither as a demonstration of his faith and powers.
I think it's Cain.
No, it's Rachel and Leah.
Really?
Yeah. Because mandrake, one of the superstitions around it is about fertility.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they were both having trouble having children, yeah, et cetera. Second question.
Yeah.
Which way was mandrake used in ancient Greece?
Okay.
A, to treat gout. B, as a talisman to keep thieves away.
Uh-huh.
C, for success in battle.
Uh-huh.
Or D, for constipation.
I think everything was for constipation in ancient Greece.
Actually, for gout.
Oh.
But you're right that it was used medicinally. It was, like, used...
You're very sweet to give me partial credit.
As, yeah, half point. And it was used, like, also as an anesthetic and...
Wow.
Yeah, and a lot of different medicinal uses in ancient Rome and Greece, but gout was one of them. Last question. Mandrake is mentioned several times in Shakespeare's works. What is it used for, specifically in the plays Othello and Antony and Cleopatra? A, as a sleeping potion. B, as a hallucinogenic. C, as an aphrodisiac. Or D, as a cure for sullied women.
So we just saw Othello, you and I.
Oh, yeah.
And so I should know. I'm going to say as a sleeping potion, because often what happens in Shakespeare is you think someone's dead, but they were just asleep. And there's a lot of trying to put each other to sleep in Othello.
You're correct. It says a sleeping potion. Well, I hope you feel up to date on all your Mandrake uses.
I do now. And I got 1.5 answers right. That's a passing grade in Women of Harry Potter land.
I know. Don't take too much Mandrake because it could poison you. I'm just going to warn you and all of our listeners in case now they're like, yeah, Mandrake, the aphrodisiac.
It is actually how we got all these dogs to be so quiet, though.
I know. We
laced the peanut butter with Mandrake.
And now all of their gout is gone.
You're welcome, doggos.
This has been Women of Harry Potter. We're executive produced by me, Ariana Nettleman, and Vanessa Zoltan. We're a production of Not Sorry Productions, and we're edited and produced by Chelsea Erson. Our music is by Nick Boll, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.